Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We didn't really get into the pre-show into what's going on with us. What's going on with you? How are you, man?
Oh, you know, much the same, cruising along. That's all I got.
That's all. I'm like awash in a sea of work and NCAA basketball.
Yeah, no, same. Although there's some crossover between the two for me. A lot of hoop, a lot of TV stuff for this podcast, a lot of work. And then I also have a child and a wife, you know. So
yeah.
A lot to do.
Imagine
lot
if I had
to
a wife.
Do.
I'd be not productive at all.
I wouldn't say all right, I'm let's, particularly productive, no.
I did manage to get to all the homework, though.
Way to go. Me too.
Yeah. Although I only watched one episode of Beartown. You want to start there?
I watched the whole thing.
You watched the whole thing?
Yeah, which I think is going to make this discussion a little tricky.
Yeah, okay. It was hard for me simply because of the subtitles and the complete attention that Beartown demands. You know what I mean? That's 5 hours of being locked in, right, to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, it sure does. And I'm not totally sure how I feel about it. After watching five episodes, other than it is quite gripping, and I'm surprised it didn't draw you in for at least one more episode.
I'm largely stunned that you watched five, and not because I thought it was bad, but mostly just for that reason. Like, it's an intense show. You know what I mean?
Very intense show, and it gets a lot more intense, dude. A lot more intense after the first
I have a
episode.
Feeling. I mean, obviously, the pilot episode sort of at the end hits, you know, and I guess technically the beginning, you know, that you see the head device. But it certainly hints at much more, at a much deeper intensity still to come. You know what I mean? But even in that first episode, everybody in that town is kind of on edge. You know what I mean?
It's a dark place in a dark time in its history. Right. I mean, it's very clearly a struggle. And that's what this show is about more than anything else, is the struggle of life in a small town like that. And some horrifying things happen. And it's less, I think, in the final analysis about the horrible things that happen and more about those people and that town being sort of as you just described it, like dark and difficult and grim. I think the show is kind of asking the question, like, where do you find the hope for a town like this?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they answer it. But I I'm not sure, unfortunately, I'm not sure that the young man who plays the sort of second lead or one of the leads, the lead young male anyway, I'm not sure he's totally up to it. But honestly, like I said, I found the show incredibly gripping, and some of the acting is really quite excellent. But it's not an easy watch. I don't know how I made it through five episodes either. I should have been sleeping. I have not gotten enough sleep this week, and instead I've been watching a show in Sweden with subtitles. That's very, really just a pretty upsetting time.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because just by virtue of the fact that you devoured all of this in a week, I assume that you were a strong recommend. It doesn't sound like that from the way that you describe it. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, I am a recommend for sure, but I'm going to tell you that this is dark and like upsetting at times.
Yeah. So it's like if the dark, brooding Swedish story with subtitles, you know, like if that's not a barrier for entry for you, then it sounds like it's probably a rewarding experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
See that being a barrier to entry for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think this show is certainly, like I said, it's gripping and it definitely explores some deep, like, psychological stuff about living in the frozen darkness, you know?
Yeah. Boy, it is frozen, too. I mean, I say that to someone living in Minnesota. Like, it is – that's an aggressive winter in
yeah.
In that pilot. Also, I found it very weird that Kevin's out there banging pucks at, like, 4 a.m. or whatever. It's still dark and no one's complaining about the noise, even though you can really hear the noise.
It's like – yeah, it's like thunderclaps, right?
Yeah.
Through the neighborhood in the dark, freezing cold, but all that ever happens is some people come over to chat.
Yeah, it's very weird. I would be like,
well, but again, like a lot of it, life is weird in whatever like frozen Swedish hellscape this takes place in.
Bjalestad or something, I think is the name of it, right?
Bjornstad, Beartown.
Bjornstad? Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Beartown. Come on.
Beartown, yeah. Swedish,
weird language.
Not the most aesthetically pleasing language.
No, and you know, it's funny because if I had asked you a week ago, like, is Swedish a pretty aesthetically pleasing language, would you have said yes? Because I would have. I would have been like, probably, yeah. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, probably. And it's really very German and
yeah,
like it's a harsh language.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. It is interesting that at least in the pilot, they sort of jump into English for a second every now and again.
I think that's just because they're trying to, you know, make a point of the family having been in the States, you know?
Yeah.
The show is almost entirely in Swedish as time moves on.
There you go. Well, it's very Swedish, but it is intriguing, at least through one episode, and it sounds like probably still through five. They're not, you know, without spoiling anything. Or do you sense that they may make more of these?
I doubt
it. Or it's a pretty complete story as it is. Okay.
I think it's pretty much over. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue watching. It's just one of those things that, man, you really got to set aside some time because you cannot be on your phone or really doing anything else other than watching, you know?
Sure, but that's not really a comment on anything other than it being in a foreign language, right?
No.
I mean, like, it's not like there's a bunch of...
it is, you know, a comment on it a little bit. I think if the show was in English, I would still kind of feel the same way.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess I see that in a way, but that part of it makes sense, I guess, but I guess my point is just sort of anything where you have to read the words is something you kind of have to keep your eyes locked on, right? I mean, that's not...
Yes, that
abnormal.
Is true.
That's not abnormal for,
you know, like we watch Lupin, right?
Yeah.
If you miss a couple of lines or whatever.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
You know what I mean? You can kind of jump back in. There's a lot you get from context or whatever.
Right.
This, I feel like it's, you know, there's,
yeah,
there's all of these meaningful character things, at least in the pilot.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, I think that's probably true. I think that's probably, you know, true.
You step
and
away
just,
from for a second, you're in trouble.
Well, yeah, and when you're dealing in a subject matter as serious as what they end up going to, which, you know, you haven't even really gotten to yet, I think it's natural that you end up sort of having a lot of serious moments that require focus to process.
Yeah. Well, if Beartown goes down like a shot of Aquavit, I thought Tina, it was a warm cup of tea. You know what I mean?
Is that the right way to say it?
I'm not saying that.
There's a lot of unpleasantness.
Tina's life is a warm cup of tea.
Yeah.
The experience of watching it is, you know, easy and pleasant, even if the subject matter is not always.
Yeah, I think that's mostly true. I mean, in that, boy, I don't want to say I was unaware of the greatness of Tina Turner by any stretch of the imagination, but I have to say, like, it was nice to be reminded.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I'm really impressed by this documentary because obviously it's covering a lot of now really, really well-tread ground. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of the, I don't know that I've seen a documentary that is like, here it is, this is it, we're going to try to tell the definitive version of this story so that you know and that you can just leave this poor woman alone. She's going away now. You know what I mean? What a unique perspective for a documentary to take, I feel like.
I do think the most interesting part of this documentary is how very deliberately it reads as Tina Turner herself saying, this is it. Here's the definitive document, and I don't want to talk to you anymore. I finally have a comfortable, calm home life as as normal an uber-rich person, former superstar can have, and I don't want to talk to you people anymore. I don't want to hear from you. I'm not answering your questions. Here it is. I'm giving you everything I have for you, and I hope you like it, but I'm not going to do any more. And, you know, look, I'm sure there's more in Tina Turner, and in a perfect world where her life hadn't largely been about pain and suffering, I'd love to hear whatever more she had to offer. But also, as you watch this, you can't help but say, yeah, you gave it the office and it was enough. You know? You did more than enough. There's more than enough of you out there for us to enjoy for the rest of our lives. Thank you. And please enjoy your loving home life for the rest of your days. Goodbye. I'm good with it. I feel like Tina and the world are square. Thank you, Tina.
Yeah, I 100%, 100%. Like, at the end of the day, I Turner isn't all that interesting. Like, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
and you know, I have learned probably over the last decade, I've learned a lot more about what an actually important and special guitar player he was. You know, I never, growing up knowing Tina Turner and basically just vaguely understanding the abuse story and feeling like Ike was a useless appendage who just was a criminal, basically. You know, he was important to music as an innovator and guitar player, but also screw him, go to hell, you violent criminal. So, you know, it's a fascinating story. There's no doubt about that.
It is. And look, I think you're right about that. I think you're right that he was also sort of perpetually under-recognized. But, like, what a shitty response. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I mean, like, in my mind, that, like, really, ultimately,
what a shitty response in that circumstance.
Yeah, that, you know, the two have nothing to do with each other, really, right? I mean, it, like, if there was anything I didn't like about this documentary, it's the lightweight, well, you know, Ike felt disrespected and insecure, and people had left him before, so that's why he started beating the hell out of her. And it's like, no, he beat the hell out of her because he's a violent abuser, and like that's you know.
I hear that, and I don't disagree. I also think that you sort of have to understand, like, Tina's view of, like, as a whole person. You know what I mean? That, it, you know, that was more than a monster to understand why she spent all that time with him. And some of that, of course, obviously comes from the circumstances of her life and people leaving her.
I am not saying, you know, Tina should have recognized him for his woman-beating ways and left earlier, but it's nothing like that. I'm just saying, like, sure, he was under-recognized, and he was disrespected by the industry, and people did leave him, and racism was a huge part of it as well. But that's separate to me from the fact that he's a bad person who violently abused his wife over a long period of time.
Yep. Although I would also say that, right, it is going to be the first and last thing that you remember about it. Like, that's his legacy.
That's his legacy forever. Yeah.
Is the way he treated her. And it's going to, it will far overshadow anything he ever did in music.
And you know what? If that wasn't part of the story, if this was just a story of her outgrowing him, he would be getting recognition now. I mean, I don't know if he would have cared about that. He's been dead for 15, 20 years, but. Like, now is the time where when they did the Tina doc, the part about Ike would have been about how he was an under-recognized, underappreciated guitarist instead of about how he was an abuser.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and again, that's the difference.
Like the Bee Gees doc was, if you saw that.
Of course I didn't. Are you kidding me?
Oh, man, it's really good.
Oh, come
you should watch it.
Oh, stop.
No, you should. I'm serious. I'm not like a. I'm not really a fan of their music. I thought it was an interesting doc, though.
All right. I guess. I'm what's the word? The Bee Gees bother me deeply.
Really?
It's not even the music. It's something about them. Just looking at them with their pretty hair, I'm just like, get out of here, you bums.
I really think you should watch this, actually.
All right, maybe we'll do that. I think you should watch the rest of Bear Town. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, I plan to. I plan to watch the rest of Bear Town. So anyway, you know, Tina's story is just kind of amazing.
It
you
is.
Know what I mean, like,
it's, that's an undersell. It's unfreaking believable. You know, where she comes from, the circumstances of her childhood, the circumstances of partnering up with Ike in the first place, and then the unbelievable talent. I mean, if this was just a young woman born in normal circumstances who had normal opportunities and became a star because she has this incredible talent, it would still be unreal to watch because the talent. And you know what's something I realized in this that had never totally crystallized in my head before, and it's because, you know, she talks about it. Like, she is a rock star. That's what Tina Turner is. And everywhere they put her, everything they had her do, no matter what the intention was, all that ended up happening is she looked like a rock star. Very specifically, a rock star. Like Mick Jagger, like, you know, like the undeniable rock stars of our history. There are just people, you know, when Eddie Vedder, to choose a random current example, right? There's just rock stars, and her rock voice is as good as anyone's ever, and her undeniable rock star appeal is as incredible as anyone ever.
Well, right. You know, I mean, I guess it's wrapped up in that appeal, but her presence, her stage presence,
oh my God,
is just. And you know, when you look at, you know, a picture of, you know, 15-year-old orphan, essentially, Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Like, it is not apparent at all in this picture that this sort of person lives inside of her.
Right.
But once she's out on stage, it's, you can see it. It's just all so effing natural with the voice and the moves. And really, when you think about it, like, her doing all the costuming and makeup, which was really the only sort of area where she was kind of given some freedom of expression at that time. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, with no real resources, right? Like, she creates an incredible look for her and that team.
Yes.
Of dancers behind her. And, like, that's all amazing. And then, like, it is such a rarity for someone to have this reinvention in their 40s
as a woman,
a pop star. Yeah. And just like it, like an entity to do that in your 40s. Like, she dominated music for a couple of years.
Yes.
You know, like,
she's playing stadiums.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that is like, and it's all on the sheer force of her talent. And honestly, I think one of the most revelatory things that this documentary did, and it's one of the things that I don't think I've seen in any other Tina Turner material, is showing that English pop group or whatever that did What Love Got to Do with It first.
Yes.
and for you to see what that song really is and how, like, nothing it really
is. It's garbage. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a throwaway pop track. And that's what's incredible about it, is even as a pop act, she is an undeniable rock star. Because that's the difference between the garbage, you know, Wham! Ripoff version and Tina Turner's version, is one is a Wham! Ripoff band, and the other is a fucking rock star, man.
Yep. Yep. And that's all she's doing.
Yep.
She's taking that incredible voice and, like, the real emotion, you know, because the lyrics of it do sort of line up with her story in a way.
In a weird
that
way,
it, yeah. I mean, the movie about her was called What's Love Got to Do with It? You know what
right.
I mean?
And that's not just because it's her biggest song, right? That's because it fits.
Yeah. So, you know, she made it her own. And that's just, you know, it's a singular focus on her talent when you, because the song is trash.
Yep. Yep.
And that whole record they made in 2 weeks.
I know. That was one of the most unbelievable things. And it's almost a throwaway line in the doc. Like, she's off screen saying, yeah, we did that in 2 weeks. And they just move right on. And you're like, what? 2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, my God. Because it really was that more that again, that as much as anything gives you the sense of, like, this was not some elaborate project. This was a bunch of songs that are fine. And then Tina Turner applied her talent to it and it became the biggest record in the world.
Right. A record company didn't want to promote it. Right? Like, they didn't want to spend any money on it. And it became the biggest record in the world because she's Tina fucking Turner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that I think that's why, like, that's – and I think that the way they told that part of the story is pretty deliberate in that that's all part of, like, look what I've done. Stop bothering me.
Yeah. You know, this made me think of the Radiohead documentary, Meeting People's Easy. I don't know if you've ever seen that. You know, and this, you know, because there's so, like, that documentary has a lot of sort of montage scenes of people asking, you know, the difficult questions over and over. And this kind of gets you some of that too. But this, you know, that's a group going through this for, you know, the first time.
Right.
That's, you know, Tina Turner in the 60s,
right.
It's so much different, I feel like, in this case, when this stuff is already, you know what I mean? Like, she's answered this.
And not just that. But
still going on.
But with all due respect to Tom York and company, like, they're dealing with, I don't like to be talked to. And she's dealing with reliving the worst trauma of her life.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, like, calm down, fellas. Like, this is what real struggle looks like.
Right. You're getting a question about music from someone who may not totally understand the music you're asking you about.
Some nerd wants to know what OK Computer's about. All right. Is that so bad?
Right. This is, please, let's revisit the worst period of your life when you were, you know, when you've transcended that.
Yes.
When it's 15 years ago. You know what I mean?
Right. Or in this case, you know, 35 years ago. And you've, like, transcendence feels like a soft word for what she has done to that trauma. Right? Like, she is so... Yeah, and just, like, I just, you know, the overwhelming takeaway here is just, like, thank you and congratulations, Tina. Honestly.
Right.
Like,
and,
that's...
And by the way, the sharing of this trauma was massively inspirational for people, right?
Yes, so, like, hugely important.
So then everyone wants to tell her that. Like, oh, man, what a weird predicament to be in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, her greatness was a curse in a way. So,
in a way, yeah. And at the same time, like, you know, that was the thing I found myself wondering. Like, I guess she probably would trade it all for an average life. But boy, that would have to be a tough decision, right? Would I erase the trauma if I also erased the tremendous success? Is that a choice you would make? I can't imagine. You know, it's probably hard to even conceive from her position, but I wonder if someone was like, you could be a middle-class data processor who never has anything eventful happen in her entire life. Is that a trade she would make?
I think the answer to that question, and I don't mean to sound hokey, is if she is the data processor, but she is able to find real love. In that, you know what I mean? You know, someone who loves her for her and real friends and those things that she didn't have in this life.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
Probably
because
take
she does
it, yeah.
say, I think pretty early on, that, you know, in her mind, the bad experiences have outweighed the success.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and I, you know, ultimately she does find real love.
Mm-hmm. But it just takes
which
a while.
Is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you really, like, that part made me really happy. That,
yeah.
You know, she eventually found someone who, like, just, you know, appreciated her for
what kind of monster didn't tear up hearing Irvin talk about Tina? Come on now.
Yeah. It was great. It was
just
great.
Just like, this man cares about her and loves her for who she is. And they just, like, live together on their estate in Switzerland, and good for them.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know. Like, to me, I think that's part of it, because I think, you know, the absence of love, you know, is such a defining factor in her life, even as a parent,
yeah,
on her own, right? Like, there's so much time,
yeah,
separated from these children.
And to bring it full circle once again, what's love got to do with it? Applies, you know, really, it's seamless.
Yeah, it sure is. So anyway, I thought this was, you know, I mean, look,
watch
her
this.
Story is great, but it's extremely skillfully told.
Yeah, great doc
as well. Yeah, and I would imagine that it really has to be a challenge when, you know, someone whose life has been a major hit movie and a, you know, hit Broadway play.
Yep.
You know,
not to mention she was just, like, on stage for millions, basically.
Yeah. I also love that Oprah and Gail are, like, you know, just good friends.
Oprah is deeply involved.
Like, at the wedding.
Yeah,
the
well,
wedding,
you know,
really cute,
Oprah's, I didn't even know this. My wife told me this as we were watching the Tina movie. But are you aware of Oprah's violent childhood story?
I am not, no. No.
Well, I barely know it either. I just learned about it a couple of days ago, but so I don't want to mess it up. But, like, apparently, she was raped repeatedly as a teen, was pregnant at 14. You know, the baby died in infancy, and, like, sort of had to escape on her own, and ended up doing radio during her high school career, and she was on TV locally by 19, and then, you know, became Oprah.
Wow. Well, that was dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I get why those two can relate to each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly disturbing, but it was a wrinkle to that relationship, because otherwise it just seems like a weird celebrity friendship, right? But I think it's, you know, it's two women whose lives were inescapably shaped by trauma.
Yeah, and I would say time-wise, we're on very parallel tracks, right?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Remarkable success around the same time, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so I think that probably helped a lot. But man, you know, fantastic story, and it is really nice to be reminded of the greatness of Tina Turner, you know?
Yeah.
And the greatness is undeniable.
That's right. If it was just that, if it was just like a retrospective on the greatness of Tina Turner, it'd be worth your time, but it's much better than that.
Yeah, 100%. All right, what else we got this week?
We got...
We got Nate Bargatze. You want to talk about Nate Bargatze?
Yeah, I actually want to hear you talk about Nate Bargatze, because I mean, I'll just say off top, I quite enjoyed this. I'm not going to tell you he's, you know, the next George Carlin or something, but I quite enjoyed this. But I think there's some specificity that may not have resonated with you.
No, actually, there's some specificity that did resonate with me, in that I know this guy. Like, I don't know him. I don't know Nate Bargatze at all. I hadn't really heard of him before this stuff came up.
But you know,
this
like,
is not his first Netflix special.
You know, like, Southern white guy.
Yeah.
Who lives a certain way.
Yeah, I know that Tennessee guy. You know, he's not that different from the Georgia version.
Right.
What I mean? Like, you know, I
and
think
he's
he does
a pretty
a lot
good
of
dude,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, that there's nothing loaded in that. Like, it's just, you know, fun, the funny Tennessee guy, you know what I mean? So, you know, I feel like a lot of those kind of stories I could relate to, and the accents and all of that. And yeah, like, he's genial and funny. I didn't think it was transcendent comedy that's going to make you, you know, revisit your viewpoint on the world, but I also don't think it's really trying to be that. I
no,
do think it's
you know
coming
what it
from
is?
A place of truth, though.
It comes from a place of truth, and it's a good time, and it's a big, like, smiler and giggler. It's not a big belly laugher, right?
Yeah,
but
agree with that.
You're smiling the whole time, and he makes you giggle at little things. Like, he's just he is a very subtle deliverer, if that's a thing. His delivery is subtle. He tosses off just like clever little funny observations, basically, that I think, like, you know, there's a lot of parenthood stuff here is what I was obliquely referring to earlier.
Yeah, I figured that's what you were referring to.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm not a parent, but.
But it's pretty
it's
funny,
like you can't
right?
get those jokes.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff with his daughter is pretty funny. And I have to say, like, I hate to conform to gender norms like this, but the bit. Slight spoiler, but you know, it's like the Eddie Murphy thing, you know, it's funnier when he does it, but the bit about you know, my daughter's school called and said, you know, what bus is she on, and I said, you called the dad? And basically it's a whole thing, and at one point he's like, all right, okay, all right, I'll deal with this now, what school are you calling from? And I have to say, like, my son is not yet two, so, like, and we're in a pandemic, so we haven't had to deal with a lot of that specific kind of stuff, but just in terms of, like, dad doesn't know what's going on, and only an idiot would ask dad, like, what to do, or where something is, or, you know, what the next steps are, like, I deeply identify with that, because I am just another child walking around the house who just happens to take instruction better than the 23-month-old, you know?
Right. You're definitely in the passenger seat on that ride.
100%, especially for a young kid. And, like, just the notion, at one point he says, I'd rather you ask a woman who doesn't know her, you know? Like, it's like, I really kind of feel like that about my son. Like, you're probably better off just, like, finding a mom on the street and asking her what to do and then telling me, and I'll follow the instructions. I will. I'm pretty good at following instructions. And like, you, if you get me into enough of a pattern, right? Like I spend an hour or two with my son every morning because my wife goes to work and I'm a useless layabout who just talks on the radio in the afternoons. So I'm not doing shit really. So every morning I'm like, you know, the babysitter for 2 hours. And after 22 months of doing that, I have a decent grasp on it. I can feed him breakfast and mostly entertain him for 2 hours without losing my shit. But that's about the limit, you know? That's that's about what I got in me. And the idea of, like, calling me for some sort of expertise is just stupid and hilarious. So anyway, that's a long
like
way
you
of
can,
saying...
You can watch him, but you can't prepare him to be a person. That's what you're saying.
Later... Like, I'm very high on my potential to prepare him to be a person once we're having, like, legitimate conversations.
Right.
But that's years away, man.
Yep. And until then.
Until then, I am the sous chef of this child. The executive chef is working in a medical office at this moment.
Right. And she should definitely be your first call, is what you're saying.
100%. So, yeah, again, it's just a long way of saying this is a bit that is absolutely based in truth and resonates and made me giggle a lot. And he's just like a – like, boy, if you need a low-key nice time with some smiles, I highly recommend Nate Bargatze. It's – there. I don't feel like there's a single thing in there that could really offend you, and it's just it's like nice, fun comedy.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Low-key smiles, kind of comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, not a bad thing if you were like, I want to watch some stand-up. Hey, you feel like some stand-up? What, you know, what should we put on?
Yeah.
Solid choice.
It's gonna leave you happy.
Low chance of regretting the decision. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not oh my God, there's a new Chappelle out and we need to watch it.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
and it's not like, wow, it's okay. Man, I never thought about that stuff. Psh, my mind is blown. It's not that, but it's not, as you said at the beginning, it's not trying to be that. It's not purporting to be that.
No, correct. It seems like, you know, he could make 10, 12 of these specials. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think people would be pretty good with that, you know, and I think there's definitely an audience for it. So
yeah, tend to agree.
Good for him. How did you come across that again? I'm trying to remember how you found that.
I think Netflix probably recommended it because I watched his last special, but I've seen him live a couple of times, as an opener for bigger comedians. I know Marc Maron was one of them. I can't remember the other, but I've seen him once or twice.
Yeah. He sounds fun to tour with.
Yeah.
I did enjoy, by the way, that they actually got the other comic to, like, recount the story about
hilarious.
Him pretending not to know who Tanya Harding is.
Hilarious. And that guy was really confounded by the whole thing. It was so funny.
Yeah, that was good. all right, that leads us to the last blockbuster.
Yeah, I feel like you were reticent to watch the last blockbuster, or at least not particularly excited. How'd that turn out for you?
I was wrong.
Yeah, you sure were.
I'm gonna say this was amazing. I think my concern, you know, having seen any number of the surprisingly prodigious amounts of news reports that have been produced about this story.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't know that there would be enough there. But there actually really is, you know.
It really is. And it's not just there, right? It's not just at that blockbuster. It's the romance of the video store.
Right.
And Blockbuster owns this fascinating place in the video store's history, wherein it is both the evil corporate destroyer of ma and pa video shops, and then also collapse in on itself out of its own stupidity and corporate malfeasance and ends up as the very last Ma and Pa video store.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, what a story.
It is quite an art. And Blockbuster is a company that is simultaneously bland and innovative, right?
That's right.
Which is sort of a weird space to be in. You know what I mean?
100%.
And it occupies, I think, this sort of weird nostalgia for people where, you know, when it at its sort of corporate takeover height, it was sort of synonymous with the video store experience. And unless you were an urbanite that had the super cool video store in your neighborhood or whatever, you know what I mean?
Well, and I did have that. Okay. I had the super cool video store literally three blocks from the house. Right. And it was great. West Coast Video. It was smaller than my living room practically. And it had the weird dark porn room and, you know, two copies at most of any movie. And it was awesome. We used to go there all the time. And I remember family trips there, browsing through the stacks, arguing forever, right? And yet, I also have to say, like, when Blockbuster really arrived, it was this combination of the, you know, ew, Starbucks, corporatization, mass production feel, and also an amazement at all the things that were suddenly at your fingertips. It was huge, and it had everything. And, like, I distinctly remember that explosion of opportunity. Like, I don't know that a kid today can understand going, like, that sort of explosion of opportunity in terms of things that are available to you, you know, media wise, because everything is available to everyone all the time now.
Right.
And like, there's nowhere that we have reached the terminus of that path. Like, there is no more explosion of availability, really, in terms of media. And things will change, but a phase shift like that from, like, you know, somebody rented Terminator, I guess we can't have that for a week, to you could rent four copies and watch it in every room of your house at the same time, you know, like, that was mind-blowing. As a kid,
yeah.
I feel like you're young enough to have the same experience.
Yeah, well, just the explosion of you could watch movies at home.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I was there for that, and then yeah, and that experience, and it, you know, Blockbuster is—it's almost like a precursor to Amazon in a way, right? Like, in that you're aware that this company might be a little bit evil.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and definitely uncool. But at the same time, man, is it just nice to have everything at
right.
your fingertips and to just be able to get the thing that you want. And that's that it, like, and those two competing feelings are sort of balanced against each other within that experience, you know.
And,
what I mean?
And yes, and just like Amazon, there's a feeling of like, God, how did we live before we could just go rent a copy of, you know, Last Action Hero. I don't know why I'm exclusively picking Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, but, you know, what? God, can you believe we lived in a world where, like, I had to wait for the Joneses to return Jingle All the Way before we could rent it?
Yeah.
Now it's a bit.
I mean,
Arnold thing.
You not spend hours, like, you go to a Blockbuster and you can spend hours just trying to, like,
yes.
figure out the movie that you were going to get?
Oh, dude, one of the reasons this podcast is good for my life is I need assignments. If you tell me go to the video store and get me something, what I'm getting you is a nice evening alone while I browse the stacks of the video store debating with myself what to get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there was decisions.
Like, that's who fundamentally, that's who I am, is the guy who you learn not to send into the video store because it's too late to watch the movie by the time I get the hell out of there.
Yeah. And, you know, there were video games were an extra wrinkle of that, too, as part of that Blockbuster experience, right? Because that kind of matched the explosion of that medium. And so then you were renting games and, you know, so you had sort of the double section. And maybe you get one of each, you know, you get a game for yourself and a movie for the family and, you know. yeah, I mean, I, you know, that was a huge part of the childhood, and I'm sure that's the reason that movie got made, is right. Is
that's exactly, you know, right. But Gen also
X nostalgia.
But I'm glad it did, because I think it's great Gen X nostalgia. Like the staff picks, man. I miss the staff picks.
Yeah.
The staff picks. That's how you found the really weird movie that you otherwise might not have seen. You know? That's why you watched
that weird movie's just in a pile, right? Just in a pile of everything else, and you have to pull it out somehow.
Or like it's next to the checkout bin at Walgreens, you know, and or the checkout register rather, and you like browse through it and it's $5.99 and you're like, eh, I don't know.
Well, and that's going to be the explosion, right? Where, you know, now that everything is there, right? It's the recommendation and optimization of everything that is going to be what carries the day. And,
you know, it's interesting. All these streamers, like everybody everywhere, really, is collecting data. They're collecting data on you so they can give you what they think you want. But I think what a lot of people want, really, in the end, is a human recommendation.
Yeah.
You know?
And a little bit of surprise. You know, it's interesting because this show, it messes up all of my algorithms a little bit, right? Like, drives a lot of the things that I watch.
Yep.
And I'm not the only one deciding what we're going to watch. And we're trying a lot of things that I might not even be that interested in, right?
Yeah.
On my own. To discuss on this thing. So, but you know, my Netflix and my Amazon and my, you know, HBO Max or whatever, they don't know any of that, right? They're just thinking this is what I'm choosing. So,
right. So you're getting all these recommendations of comic book movies and fantasy stuff, and it's driving you crazy.
So, you know, it's just not going to be the same. And it's not, you know what else is not the same? It's not the same as, you go to the store, you ask for the movie, they don't have it, and the lady goes to fucking Costco and buys it so that they'll have it forever after that. Like, just that someone, you know, that there's someone out there who cares about you and your movie enough to do that.
Yep. Well, that's...
I don't know how you replace that with an algorithm. You know?
That's the thing is we, you know, you don't, you know, obviously the irony is like, you don't have to worry about that digitally, but that's the other part of the movie that we haven't talked about yet. And probably irresponsibly is this lady whose name I regrettably forget, but Blockbuster Mom.
Yeah.
She is a remarkable character, and her passion for the community and for what being the proprietor of a small town video store is all about, that's what has kept this alive. Nothing other than that has maintained this Blockbuster, which is really not a Blockbuster, of course. Like, at this point, it's just a private ma and pa video store that is renting the name Blockbuster from, like, Dish Network.
Right.
You know?
Right, yeah.
And the only reason Dish Network...
For an unspecified period of time.
That's right. And the only reason Dish Network hasn't thrown them in the garbage is because they don't want the bad press.
Right.
I'm sure. Right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So that's the weird stalemate we're at, but what it has created space for is really a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, and she's also documentary gold in that you have this woman who... is ostensibly just a normal random mom from Bend, Oregon, but who has now been interviewed so many times. I think that she's pretty good.
She's a professional.
At being interviewed on TV.
She's a professional interview subject.
Yeah.
And you know what? The other thing is, to her credit, and I don't think this has anything to do with being interviewed, she's very intentional about what she's doing. She understands the situation very precisely. They don't focus much on it, but in the couple of times she sort of speaks business ease, she's clearly very on top of what the business needs to do to survive and different ways that they can manage that, right? Like, she's not I mean, God bless her for driving to Costco, but she's not doing it strictly out of the kindness of her heart. She's doing it because she understands that those sorts of relationships she's building are what keeps her business alive, right?
Yep.
So, like, all this stuff, she's really very, very clever.
Not her business, by the way, right? She doesn't own the store.
No, but she is the proprietor, right? She means she's running it.
She runs it. Yeah.
And it's her job and her passion, very clearly. And so keeping it alive is important to her, and I think she understands what that takes very specifically and professionally, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that part of it is interesting and kind of cool, too, is like, here's this woman who, you know, for whatever reason, maybe just by virtue of working at this store for God knows how long, is a very savvy operator.
Yeah. And likewise, I'm 1,000% sure that she was aware that, hey, look, making a popular Netflix movie is going to be very good for business for the store, right?
Like,
they're
going to
have tourist visitors every day for a very long time.
She has obviously seen the positive effect of the news coverage. So why wouldn't this be even better? You're putting this in everyone's house on Netflix. And yeah, there's going to be more loonies who want to drive to Bend, Oregon. And look, I've been to Bend, Oregon. I did not frequent the Blockbuster. I sort of regret that now. And I'm not going to make a pilgrimage, but I'll tell you what. I get it, because you know what made me get it? When all the people they interviewed talked about the smell. And here's what's funny about that, right? The smell of Blockbuster is not a smell like you remember, you know, mom's cinnamon buns smelling up the house with delicious, sugary, you know, beauty. It's like a fine smell. It's a average smell.
It's a specific smell, though,
right? Like, it's neither good nor bad, but it is specific. And it is associated with a specific thing. And it is, as soon as they said it, I was like, wow, that's a thing that 100% exists that I 100% remember that I had not thought of in 20 years.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. I got into a service elevator, the elevator near my apartment's a service elevator, and they had just put in new, you know, that elevator cover that they put into service elevators.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, it's vinyl. So for like 2 days, the elevator had that new car smell. Right. So it was very disorienting because I had a very whiff of like, I'm in a new car. Like it was like putting me in this like time and place, just being in this elevator. Like specificity of smell is like a really powerful thing and like connected to a lot of nostalgia. So I guess specificity of scent, right? And like the second they bring it up, you're like, I know exactly the scent that you're talking about. You know what I mean? And it takes you right back to, like, I can see, you know, the Blockbuster in Toco Hill Shopping Center in Atlanta, Georgia right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just thinking about that smell. So, you know, the doc got that. I think they definitely understood what buttons to push. You know what I mean? So, I'm not surprised, honestly, that it was sitting in the Netflix top 10 at the time. Because it's watchable and it, you know, it pushes your buttons.
Yeah, absolutely. It pushes all the right nostalgia buttons. And you know what? I will say, for anyone of our approximate age groups, that's what it's going to do. But I feel like this would be fascinating as just like a relic of a past time for someone who's 20. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's a well-done movie about a specific time and place and thing that really summons up some images and tells a story. I feel like this is just a good movie.
Yeah. I would like to watch it with some Gen Z high school kid or something like that just to get their take.
So they can pause it and be like, hold on. You walked to the movie store? Like, that's what you want to do? You want to have a tween tell you how old you are? Good luck.
Well, look, it's difficult to watch this movie and not feel old.
You
right?
do feel a like bit old, yeah.
Like, that's no doubt. That's already happened. So,
right. But I do feel like if you're 20, it probably makes you feel young, right? Like, wow. My older cousin did that shit, and man, that looks like forever ago.
And that's it's because it does exist in this place, right? Where it's definitely in the past, but it doesn't feel like that long ago. You know what I mean? Right? Like, but technologically, it's just like, it's like infinite worlds, right? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, when was the last time you thought about Netflix sending you DVDs in the mail? You know what I mean? Like, that's,
I guess
it wasn't that long ago.
I hung on to that for a while, so it really wasn't that long ago.
Were you one of those people that was really upset when they were, because I got that one wrong. when they kind of really shifted to streaming. I liked my DVDs. I thought we had a good system going.
Right. I don't know that I got it wrong per se, because I'm not sure I expected it to go a different way, but I did hold on tight to I like media. I like to even digitally, I prefer to like purchase an album and download the files. You know, I eventually stopped doing that because it was so cost ineffective. But like, I still have a library of tens of thousands of MP3s on an external hard drive. Like, it's not that I think the world is going to end, but like when it does, I want to still have my music. You know what I'm saying?
I hear that.
And that's how I feel about everything.
Those files, you're just storing them somewhere in case the music apocalypse hits us.
No, I have a bunch on my phone. Like, what if I'm on a road trip and I drive through a no service zone? I sit in silence?
Well, are you not downloading some playlists on your Spotify so that you can play them offline?
I have the Apple Music, but no, that's what I'm saying. Instead, I have MP3s on my hard drive that I transfer onto my phone. Like an old.
Okay. Well, but that's what you do. You don't sit in silence. You just play the playlist that you have stored on your app.
Yeah, that's my point. I'm saying if I didn't have my MP3s that I had, you know, acquired and transferred to my phone like a physical piece of media. Anyway, the whole point is I like that sort of stuff. I have a record collection. You know, whenever they let me buy a PS5, I'm going to buy the one with the disc drive, all that stuff.
Yeah. And look, one of the things that really jumps out at me about music collection now in this sort of infinite era where you're renting everything, right, is that songs really only exist and they're really only yours if you remember them. You know what I mean, right? So like the nice thing about having a music collection was that it was yours. You know what I mean? Even if you didn't think about it for a while, you could go back and be reminded, right? But in this sort of thing where it's not yours and you're just picking it and grabbing it and maybe stick it on a playlist or whatever, but you know, and I guess you can like songs now, but I don't know when people do that sort of thing. It's mostly like you listen to that song when you remember to listen to that song. And if
That's
you go
right.
a couple of months or you know, a couple of years, and you can forget about it, right?
That's
and then
right.
it kind of ceases to exist because you don't know to look for it, right?
That's so. Part of it. And that's why I buy the records of songs of albums I really like. Is like, then I look through my record collection and I'm reminded of it, you know? And with the exception of a few bands and artists that I like never stop listening, like there's certain things that are just in rotation. For me, obviously, you know, Fish is part of that, but D'Angelo never goes out of rotation. Anderson .Paak never goes out of rotation. Green Day never really goes out of rotation. Like there's a list of 10 or 15 bands that like my brain never lets very far out of mind. After that, it's a crapshoot if I don't stay on top of it, which is why I like to, again, acquire things and have them in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let's acquire some homework for this week because we got to get going.
Yeah, we're going to try to make it a mini week, which is good because we just spent an awfully long time talking about God knows what on this week's podcast.
we sure did. So we had some alternates, but we're gonna keep it to three in the homework this week. I think there's a new season of Top Chef starts Thursday.
Pod Chef is back. Yeah.
I think for now we're going to cover Top Chef on the Tuesday show.
Yep.
So that's the plan. You get it a couple days late from us.
Spotify buys the Toy Department Network, then we'll just have separate feeds for all the shows.
Right.
But
right.
For now.
But for now.
Yeah.
For now.
Did you see Spotify invented live radio?
I did not. No.
Oh, it's a very exciting time. Spotify is apparently considering having some of their podcasters go live in a revolutionary move.
I think they're going to see, some diminishing returns there. Okay. You know what I mean? At least with that sort of thing. I think they're going to realize that podcasters are not that suited to live radio.
Yeah, I don't think that's the only thing they're going to realize. I think they may, in fact, ultimately realize that this medium already exists.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't want to speak for anybody. They may not realize that.
Yeah, it is funny. Every once in a while you see something like, what if there was a podcast in real time? Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is. And you can buy a thing for like $5 at Target that can let you hear it for free all the time.
Yeah, or we just put it up on. You got Alexa? You can put it up on that right now.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. So yes, there's we're gonna watch Top Chef.
I don't know how we got from Top Chef to that, but that was probably my fault, and I apologize. Top Chef is gonna be great. I'm very excited. Where is it? I don't even know.
Portland.
Oh, Portland. Yeah. I love this because I'm gonna recognize places. I guarantee they go to Pine State Biscuits.
I don't know that I would guarantee that they go anywhere.
They're gonna go to Salt. There's gonna be a Salt and Straw ice cream challenge, guaranteed.
Yeah, I think the challenge is, you could say like, yeah, will there be a challenge? But remember that one of the principal things here is that they're filming this during COVID. And so that's requiring some real changes. Just things like, Tom and Padma going over to the chef's tables in a quick fire, going, hey, what's going on? Can't do that anymore. So or the way judges' tables presented. And so I don't know that they're, I know that the contestants are living in a hotel this year as opposed to a house.
Why can't they do that? Aren't they all tested and quarantined?
I don't know.
Maybe Padma and Tom are not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think especially Tom, I think because Tom,
he's got businesses and whatnot.
It's like multiple businesses and stuff.
Yeah. Padma's got a cookbook. We just ordered it. It was a gift from me to my wife for, our anniversary. Not the only gift. Calm down.
Yeah. I thought that's a nice gift. It's a lovely gift.
Yeah. Some good stuff in there.
So, anyway, Top Chef's going to be amazing. I can't wait. It sounds like they've lined up some really good chefs too. Some very accomplished chefs, for this season. So that'll be fun.
Can't wait.
There's a movie called Bad Trip that Kolsky clearly knew a lot more about than me. So do you want to, fill people in on Bad Trip at all?
Not really. It's got Eric Andre and Lil Howery, and there's a prank show element to it, and that's mostly what I know.
All right. And then The Irregulars.
Yeah, I can't believe that I got you to agree to this, but yeah, it's sort of a detective-y show. It's The Irregulars are the group of, let's say, private contractors that Sherlock Holmes hires to help him with his cases, and that is what this show is about.
There's a vaguely similar show coming to HBO. It's not that similar, so I don't want to get too far into it. But The Nevers or whatever, right?
Yes.
That looked interesting, but I'm now out on.
Because of The Irregulars?
No, because I found it's a Josh Whedon thing, and I'd just rather not.
Oh.
So.
Why are we still doing Joss Whedon things? Huh?
I don't know.
But it's got Nick Frost. I did see that preview. It did. Ah.
Yeah, it looked good. And then So maybe this will be a replacement for that. Was the point of me bringing that up?
I'm frustrated by that. I wanted to watch that.
Yeah, but F that guy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, so that's it. Bad Trip, Top Chef, the Irregulars, and then of course we'll be back at you on Thursday with or Thursday evening, I guess. Maybe you'll probably be Friday by the time you hear it. Right?
Yeah. I'm guessing we're looking at like a midnight Thursday night release here, because we have got to watch not only Wednesday night's The Challenge Double Agents episode, but also the debut of The Challenge All-Stars. And I'll tell you, buddy, I just finished watching season 11, which is one of the gauntlets, I believe, number 3. And holy moly, am I ready for some of these old cats to come back? it was the season that I just watched is the season that truly establishes Derek Kaczynski's greatness as a Challenge champion, although he is eliminated right before the final. He wins like 4 straight eliminations, because it's a season where the team captain goes into elimination every time, and he just stays team captain because he keeps beating guys who are twice his size. It was inspirational, and yeah, I'm excited to see him compete again.
He did have an inspirational run, and I'm curious, because so much, you know, because he was really undersized, right? Like, so much about that was like heart and fire and like Chicago kid toughness. You know what I mean?
Love it. Love that Chicago kid, baby. Derek Kaczynski, he's my early pick for champion. I bet the odds won't be great, but I would bet him if I could.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm wondering is like, can you retain that in your, you know, when you have a family in your 40s, right? Like, it seems like, I don't know if he's actually in his 40s, but I got to imagine he's pretty close at this point.
Yeah. He's older than me.
Fessy said on the Challenge podcast, by the way, not to get too deep in the Challenge, that Anissa's only 2 years older than him.
He's completely wrong, and so am I. Wow, Derek is only 37. Good for him.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Fessy's 30, by the way. Or he's turning 30 this year, he said.
Anissa is my age. Yeah. I'm positive of that. She was born on September 11th, 10 days after me. Right, so she's 39. So Fessy is incorrect. And I wasn't sure. I also heard that, and I wasn't sure if he was doing a bit like a, you know, happy, you know, 15th, 29th birthday sort of thing, or if he actually is misinformed about Anissa's age by 7 years.
I thought maybe he's talking about Tori.
I think Tori might be younger than that. No.
Yeah, I think Tori is younger than that. But I was like, there's no way Anissa's 32. It's just,
no.
She's been on TV for 20 years at this point.
That is literally correct.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tori's only 28.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Former college soccer player. Learned that this week.
We're doing the Challenge podcast. We got to stop.
I know. All right. We will talk Challenge on Thursday or Friday, whatever it is. I can't wait. And other than that, let's get out of here.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.